Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello.
What's up, dude? How are you?
I am, mate. I'm all right. How are you doing?
All things considered, I'm doing okay. Yeah, getting by.
All things considered, yeah, yeah.
It's all we can do, isn't it?
That's it, mate. That's it. It's crazy times we're living in.
The last time I saw you was, I think, last summer, and it was when you and Thomas came over to my house, and we sat down and we ate all the biscuits.
Yeah.
And we talked about how Hollywood remakes are overrated for your amazing podcast, Overrated Everything. Towards the end of last year, obviously you and Thomas were both busy doing projects and filming and things, so you put a hold on the podcast. Surely now is the time more than ever to bring it back.
Well, hopefully, mate. We have been chatting over the last couple of days, because the thing is, we both like to say, obviously both being working actors. We both got work, which was brilliant, but obviously not so brilliant for the podcast because we couldn't meet up every couple of weeks. So, and obviously you'll know, getting guests is bloody hard work sometimes because you're working to other people's schedules.
Yep.
So me and Tom have had a chat the last couple of days, and we're thinking of maybe doing something similar to what you're doing, like and getting people over Skype or over the phone. And doing it that way, I guess, because now we know that, you know, nobody's busy.
That's it. So I mean, now is the time to be reaching out, as I've been doing, mate, because I knew that everybody would be in the same boat, which is basically just cooped up at home, kind of going stir crazy, almost wanting to do something.
Yeah, that's it. People want to be creative, don't they? And I think, you know, now more than ever, I've seen some brilliant stuff online of people just getting the creative juices flowing because the sat at home, like you say, going a bit stir crazy and stuff. So yeah, I think we'll be back sooner rather than later, I think, hopefully.
Well, one thing you could do just to kind of get the flow back in the groove is you could just Skype each other. Has Thomas got a mic at his place as well?
That's it. No, he's not got a mic, you see, but
right.
We did a little test thing on Skype the other day, and he's confident, so it's weird. The tables have turned. Tomo's being the tech guy now. It's normally me who runs the show that way. He's ringing me up every other day telling me how we can make the podcast work with Skype and stuff. So I'm putting my faith in him.
You're having a gamble.
Could be a gamble, yeah.
Well, you mentioned there you've been seeing some great stuff online. What's been some of your favourites that's, you know, put a smile on your face?
A lad who I've just finished working with, actually, I was only watching it about half an hour ago, a lad called Tom Gill, another actor, he's just put up a video from a rap, so he's rapping in the style of Slim Shady, sort of 90s Slim Shady.
Yep.
From the perspective of the virus.
Amazing.
And it's really good, man. I listened to his lyrics and that, and it's really cool. And like you say, he's doing it in that kind of 90s Eminem, Slim Shady kind of style. It just makes it all the more brilliant. But yeah, I've seen a few. A lot of people, like you say, a lot of people are now live streaming and stuff. Me and my little girl, because I've got two little girls at home. One's 5, one's 9, 10 months now. And, you know, we've been up every morning, me and my eldest, watching Joe Wicks at 9 o'clock doing a half an hour's PE lesson, do more exercise now that I can't leave my house today. I've been in nearly 30 years of living.
I did see that in the news the other day. They were like, you can get out there and have your one bit of exercise a day. I was like, hang on a minute. One bit of exercise a day? Let's not be hasty.
I thought it was a week. It's free. You're supposed to have one of a day, isn't it?
Well, listen, mate, we'll come back in a moment. We'll chat about being at home with your family and how that's all going. We'll break for your first of five songs now. Talking of things that the internet has been coughing up, one of my least favourite things, if not indeed my least favourite after the virus itself, is the viral video of all these celebrities in their mansions without any sense of irony, singing along a cappella to one of the finest songs ever written. And once seen and heard, it can't be unseen or unheard, can it? And it kind of ruined this song for me for a while. So I'm really pleased that you've chosen it so we can reclaim it and enjoy it as it should be enjoyed in its, you know, original form. What a beautiful song as well. Is there a personal connection with you to this song, or is it just that you think it's very apt for these times? And as I say, it's about reclaiming it back from these awful celebrities that murdered it.
Yeah, no, it's one of my favourite songs. It has been since I was sort of a teenager and first heard it and first started getting into John Lennon and the Beatles.
No worries, mate. A dad's job's never done.
Yeah, that's okay, sweetheart. You put that on. Sorry, mate.
No worries, mate.
Yeah, it's been one of my favourites since, like I say, since sort of me early teens. I first started hearing the Beatles music and listening to it proper, and then listening to John Lennon. And through my sort of, when I was a kid, half my family are really religious. They're Irish. My nana used to take us to church every week and stuff. And the other half of my family are sort of, is it Roman Catholic, the Church of England? They're not too into it.
Yeah.
So I grew up confused over religion. And then when I got into my teens, I realised that for me it was all a bit, it just didn't make sense, and realised that I was an atheist. One second, she's back again. Well, press this back button there, that one, darling. Yeah, that's the one. Go on. So realised that I was an atheist, and this song was one of them that helped me kind of come to terms with that. Because like I say, because I was kind of brought up half sort of strict sort of Catholic religious, took to church pretty much not every week, but quite a lot. When I was a kid, I was like, oh God, this is wrong. This, I can't think that this isn't true, because, you know, God must be watching all that. And then one of the lines in the song is, imagine there's no heaven, it's easy if you try. And it just spoke to me, I guess. And I was like, oh, wow, yeah, so people can say that. People can say, oh, imagine there's no heaven, because that's how I feel at this moment in time. And, yeah, and then obviously it got, like I say, it got me into John Lennon's music. Working Class Hero would probably be...
Oh, mate, what a tune.
Another one of my favourite songs, I think. And obviously the Beatles, there's too many amazing, great songs from the Beatles. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds or Strawberry Fields, probably my favourites. But, just a great song, isn't it? And, you know, John Lennon was just, you know, he had his faults, as do a lot of people. You know, apparently he was not very nice to his first wife and his eldest son. I believe he kind of disowned him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a brilliant man. He was a genius.
And what a tune.
Yeah, what a tune. Yeah, brilliant song as well. Just the message in it, you know what I mean? Like, love one another. Do you know what I mean? Nothing else matters, I guess, than each other. And you know, we're finding that out now in the kind of the hardest way possible. Like, nothing really does matter except for each other. Do you know what I mean?
Living for today.
People like yourself as well who are at home now, it's going to be financially trying. However, the positive, the plus side must be that you get to spend all this real quality time with your wife, with your two kids. Are they both girls, Gadget?
Yeah. Two girls, Phoebe's 5 and Willow's 10 months.
So you're outnumbered and outgunned.
I'm outnumbered and outgunned, mate. I need help. It's me and we've got two dogs as well. One's a boy and one's a girl. So there's just me and our Rudy. We're the men of the house.
I saw a lovely video the other day you put up of you. What game were you playing? You were spinning your daughter around and you were kind of doing some, I guess, Nintendo Wii, was it? Sort of gymnastic stuff.
So we've been doing all sorts, mate, because obviously, you know, we're, as parents now, we're expected to be teachers, and I'm kind of down with that. I've always said to my missus that I'd love to give, if we had the time and the money, homeschooling, I'd love to do it, because I'm not a big fan of the school system at the minute, and it's brilliant. I mean, hats off to teachers, man. I've realised that more than ever this week. But yeah, we've been doing loads, so we did a little... I want to keep her active. I want to keep her fit because she's really...
Well, at that age, at 4, there's a lot of energy, right?
Yeah, 5. Yeah, loads of energy, man. She wakes up, you know, jumping on us and everything. So she's, you know, so the other day we were out in the garden and I made like a little obstacle course, you know, just using things in the garden. She's got a little scooter that she's probably not played on for about 2 years. So we picked that up. She had to go around in a circle on that. Then she had to dribble in between these little... solar panel lights that we've never, you know, that probably bought about 10 years ago. And she's on a trampoline. Like, we're lucky, really. We've got quite a big, nice big garden. When we bought the house, sort of 7-8 years ago now, that's what the main draw was. And we never use it, even in the summer, really, now. We hardly ever go in it. Because having kids, you're kind of like, oh, let's take them out. It's a nice day, let's take them out.
Yeah, yeah,
really,
of course.
I'm really just being in my garden with my little girl. We were doing weeding the other day. She was helping me weed.
getting her to work.
Getting her to work. On a sweatshop soon. Brilliant. making all the Nike gear. Then we went upstairs the other day. We were on the Wii. And, you know, just because, again, you know, I feel like I've been prepping for this for all my life. I've got pretty much every console going. I've just always collected games consoles. So I was up there showing her which ones were which and which ones I used to play with my grandma, who she calls her angel and that. So we went on the Wii and stuff and we were playing on that. And then my missus came home from work and we were all on it the next day. Do you know what I mean? It's really beautiful. I think you've got to see the positives in situations like this. And one of them for me and for most families out there is you actually get to spend time with your kids. Do you know what I mean? You go to work and... you know, if I've had an office job in the past or whenever I'm filming and stuff, you kind of, all you want to do is spend time with your kids and your wife or, you know, your husband and that. So now we're getting to, it's really nice, you know what I mean? I mean, it's stressful. It's nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it depends on the age, doesn't it? Because, you know, every child has different things going on at different ages and stages in their development. And I guess for like a newborn or a fairly young child, I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day. She's got a daughter who's around about the same age as your youngest, about 8 or 9 months. And she was saying for that age, it's kind of ideal because they're blissfully unaware of everything that's going on. But obviously with someone who's around 5, I mean, what's her reaction to being taken out of school and everything that's going on? Is she aware of the situation? Have you tried to explain it, or how do you break it down for someone of that age?
Yeah, it's a strange one, mate, because she's, I'm gonna have to be a bit quiet here, because
no worries,
in the next room, and she has got superhuman hearing, because
obviously, you know, she doesn't get to see her friends and all of that as well. That must be tough.
Yeah, so basically she had chicken pox last year when our youngest was born. So
right,
she had chicken pox, say, 10 months ago. And so when it was literally, she had the week after our youngest was born. So we had to be really strict with her. It was like, you can't go near Willow. You can't hold her. You can't do this. It was horrible at the time because she wanted to call her new baby sister. But now, kind of luckily, in a weird, strange way, That's helped us, because we've kind of explained to her that there's something out, there's a bug.
Okay, yeah, so you can liken it to chicken pox in that way, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so people can't really go near each other, so that's why Grandma can't come in and she has to drop stuff off or whatever, because we're, at the minute, we're actually self-isolating now, because a couple of nights ago, my youngest Willow, she had a temperature.
Right.
And it's only today that we've been starting to be able to get it down under sort of the 39 mark, so it's been like 39-40, which is pretty high. So obviously, even my missus, because she's a nurse, my missus.
Oh, is she? I mean, hats off to her, mate. So, they're doing the absolute most heroic work in the world right now.
Yeah, well, see, I mean, she works with children. She's on the really, you know, with really poorly kids anyway, sort of most of the time, so she's used to all this kind of you know, infection control and stuff, which is really handy. So with Phoebe, we've kind of told her that, you know, there's this bug and stuff and that, and she gets it a bit, you know, she asks questions and that, and she's, you know, she's been a bit, yesterday, out of absolutely nowhere, she asked me randomly, she asked me about me, and she said, "Daddy, that's come out of absolute nowhere."
Yeah, wow.
So you've got to just look at things like that and how the hell do you answer questions like that?
I mean, talk about perspective, mate.
Pardon?
Talk about perspective and putting things in perspective. I mean, it's hitting home, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy, mate. And what a nice thing, though, last night, she normally goes to bed at 7. But we let her stay up till about 8:30, because I said, we're going to go out at 8 o'clock and we're going to clap for all the nurses and the carers and the people who are still working.
Yeah.
And we live pretty much facing a hospital, quite a big-ish hospital in Manchester. So we went out and we were clapping, and quite a few of the neighbours, and there's like blocks of flats facing our house. They were all out on the balconies and stuff, clapping and that. And I had hold of her in my arms, Phoebe, and we were clapping, and I just said to her, I said, "Look, you're going to remember this forever. They're going to tell, you're going to tell kids about this, and, you know, later lines, they're going to teach this in history, this moment." And I warned her, she better fucking, sorry, can I swear?
You can say whatever you want, mate. It's quarantine, radio, anything goes.
I didn't swear at her. I warned her, I said, when you're older, when you're bigger, and you've got the privilege to vote, you vote for them who protect these people, you know?
Yeah, life lessons, man.
That's it, mate. That's it. You know, she's gonna be taught well. Don't you worry about that.
I have no doubt, mate. I have no doubt. You're an absolute sweetheart. I've always known that.
cheers, mate. You too.
Thank you, dude. Let's break for your second song. I'm imagining you've chosen this one as a father. You've learned to appreciate this song. Obviously, I know you love Eminem. You're a big hip hop head. There's a couple of hip hop tracks in your list, but Hailey's song by Eminem. What's the importance of this song to you?
I'm a massive Eminem fan. love him. He was probably the first artist that I ever actually started listening to. I remember I was about 9, I think, when he kind of first kind of came out onto the scene, and I begged my mum for an album. I got his first album for like my 10th birthday. I was so young, I used to think that Eminem, Slim Shady and Marshall Mathers were three different blokes.
Yeah, man, but that's the thing though, is because the internet wasn't as widely around then, you couldn't just go online and look it up. So there'd be these, you know, mythological almost characters, and there'd be all this secrecy around them and vibe, and like, what's all that about? Like, who is this guy? What's going on?
Yeah. And that's it. Like I say, I remember saying it to my cousin. My cousin asked me, he was a bit older than me, and he got me into a lot of music. And I think we might have spoke about him on one of our podcasts. He got me into kind of music and pop culture and all that stuff. He was like sort of 7 years older than me. So a lot of kind of music that I like and a lot of films that I like and stuff, I shouldn't really like. I'm kind of 7 years ahead because I was watching them with him.
Got you. Yeah.
You know, stuff like NWA and things like that. I my age group should have missed that. But yeah. Because I, you know, hung around with him and his friends. So basically this song, Haley's song, Eminem, loved him, and I begged my mum for the Marshall Mathers LP, which was, it wasn't his first one, but it was like, I think the one that kind of pushed him out there. It had like, you know, big songs on there, Cleaning Out My Closet and stuff, I think was on there. Stan was on there, yeah. Yep. Kim, you know, Stan was on there, that was one of the ones that blew up and stuff. And that was a great, me and my mates used to sit and listen to that album day in, day out, literally knew every lyric to it. We were like 10, we shouldn't have, but we did. the Haley song, that's off the Eminem show.
Yeah.
Is it the Slim Shady show? Something like that, I should know.
Or the Marshall Mathers LP, is it?
No, so that's the Marshall Mathers LP, and then there's I think it's the Eminem show or the Slim Shady show, it's another album.
Got you.
The Haley song is on.
Yeah, maybe the Eminem show then, the fourth album.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. That's the one. So that one, I came out, I must have been about 13, 14. And I had, as most kids back then, a CD Walkman.
Yes, mate.
And one of the CDs that used to have it in school, and we had blazers in our school. So,
of course, and the headphone wire would go up the arm, and then you'd lean on your hand in class and be able to listen through one ear.
You know,
old school, dude. It,
so yeah, so that was one of the albums. There was that album, the Eminem show. There was Avril Lavigne's album, because I used to love her. The first album.
I'm with you.
Tune, absolute tune, mate. I still put that on every now and again. Me eldest, she loves Skater Boy.
She was meant to be doing a tour in April, I think it was. She was going to be doing a few nights at Brixton Academy and. Yeah, obviously that'll be one of the many shows that's pulled. But yeah, she was coming back this year, so keep your eyes out, mate, for some rescheduled dates.
It's not her, though. Have you seen that one?
No. Go on.
So apparently there's a conspiracy.
Right. That there's like an impersonator.
That Avril Lavigne died.
Right, yeah.
After like that first album. And then they just found someone who looked like her.
Amazing.
And like then used it. Honestly, it's mental. But if you have a look online, it's quite a deep one. one second. Hey, Larry, what's up? Tell me two things. What two things? I mean, I'm sat in your bed because you're sat in my bedroom watching telly, aren't you? So I'm sat in your bedroom on the phone. Can you take that? No, Sven's a bit big to take in there. But just go in there and watch telly. I won't be too long, sweetheart. You take something, what do you want to take? Do you want to take Bear? Right, okay, take Bertie. Alright, see you in a minute. Sorry, mate.
No worries, dude, it's all good.
Yeah, so it's my friend Matt. Shout hi, Matt.
Hi, Phoebe.
He said hi, Phoebe. the Eminem show was one of the albums that would have been in my pocket listening to, up my sleeve, and all that, say. And yeah, like, the Haley song, I've always been pretty paternal. Me, always wanted kids, always knew that I wanted kids, and always wanted them kind of young as well, and that. And that song, to me, is just beautiful. It's just him singing to his daughter about how much he loves her, and how, you know, at the time, how hard his wife was making things. And I, as with most of these songs, I just love lyrics, me.
Yeah, me too, mate.
I think I'm a bit tone deaf. So I very, you know, I listen to music and I very rarely hear the melody or whatever, but I always pay attention to the lyrics, and I love lyrics, and I love deep, you know, songs that mean something. I'll put music on and my mates are like, oh, that sounds hanging, and I'm like, no, don't listen to that. Listen to the what he's saying, don't, you know, listen to the humming in the background. Just listen to, you know, to that bit.
I think that's got to be the actor in you, isn't it? That's got to be like the storyteller that connects with the characters and the narratives. So.
I think so. And Eminem, you know, he's got to be one of the, you know, the best at doing that, making, you know, characters. If you listen to Stan, you know, he's playing two roles in that, you know. And then if you listen to one of my other favourite, because this is probably my favourite Eminem song, I think, Hayley's song. Which is weird because he doesn't really rap on it. It's like one little bit where he does. But, you know, other ones like Kim. I was kind of toying with the idea of putting Kim, but I thought, you know, your listeners might think I'm a bit of a psychopath. because I think, like, genuinely, I used to say, like, Kim is it's a love song. It's horrible, and the things he's saying is horrible, and obviously he's never done them things. And probably doesn't condone them things. Like, you know, Eminem says that, you know, what he's talking about doesn't mean that he's going to do it. It's just, it's poetry. He's just saying these what's on his mind. And Kim is like, you know, he's so hurt by the fact that his wife has met someone else and whatnot that he writes this fucking horrible, gruesome song about putting her in the boot of his car and horrible, horrible thing. At the same time, it's him pouring his heart out about how much he loves her and how much it's hurting. You know what I mean? And I think we've all been at that point where we've seen one of our exes with another fella or something do you know what I mean?
But
anyway, yeah, Hayley's song is just, I guess, just beautiful. And yeah, now listening to it, having children, you listen to it differently and you think, God, like, you know, so lucky to have my children and have a loving partner that we, you know, we stick together through thick and thin, and, you know, even this multi-millionaire has got problems in ways like that. You know what I mean? It's kind of reassuring, I think.
Yo, I can't sing. I feel like singing. I wanna fucking sing. I'm happy. I got my baby back. Yo, check it out.
Some days I sit staring out the window, watching this world pass me by. Sometimes I think there's nothing to live for. I almost break down and cry. Sometimes I think I'm crazy.
I'm crazy, oh so crazy. Why am I here? Am I just wasting my time?
But then I see my baby.
Suddenly I'm not crazy. It all makes sense when I look into her eyes. Oh no.
Sometimes it feels like the world's on my shoulders.
The world. I could sing, I'd keep singing this song to my daughter. If I could hit the notes, I'd blow something as long as my father to show her how I feel about her. How proud I am that I got a cot, I'm a daddy. I'm so glad that a mom didn't own. Now you probably get this picture from my public persona, that I'm a pistol packing drug addict who bags on his mama. But I wanna just take this time out to be perfectly honest, cause there's a lot of shit I keep bottled that hurts deep inside of my soul. And just know that I grow colder the older I grow. This boulder on my shoulder gets heavy and harder to hold, and this load is like the weight of the world. And I think my neck is breaking. Should I just give up or try to live up to these expectations? Now look, I love my daughter more than life in itself, but I got a wife that's determined to make my life live in hell. But I handle it well, given the circumstances I'm dealt. So many chances, man, it's too bad, could have had someone else. But the years that I've wasted is nothing to the tears that I've tasted. So here's what I'm facing: 3 felonies, 6 years of probation. I went to jail for this woman, I've been to bat for this woman. I've taken bastard people's backs, been over backwards for this woman. Man, I should have seen it coming, what I stick my penis up in. Wouldn't have ripped the prenup up if I'd have seen what she was fucking. But fuck it, it's over, there's no more reason to cry no more. I got my baby, baby, the only lady that I adore, Haley. So sayonara, try tomorrow, nice to know ya. Our babies travel back to the arms of a rifle owner. And suddenly it seems like my shoulder blades have just shifted. It's like the greatest gift you can get, the weight has been lifted. And
now it don't feel like the world's on my shoulder.
So in terms of your livelihood, what were you up to before this hit? Were you, you know, scheduled to go on any shoots? Was anything in the diary? And obviously, you know, for the foreseeable future, nothing's going to be getting made, is it? So for a jobbing actor like yourself, who I imagine, like me, very much lives hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, out there hustling, what's the immediate future looking like for you financially, dude? Obviously, without divulging your, you know, your bank details, I'm not asking you to go that deep. But what's the reality for a, you know, a jobbing actor like yourself in this environment?
I don't know, mate. I don't think anyone knows really at the minute. Luckily for me, I literally finished a job on I think the 17th of March.
Oh, great! So you just got it in there.
I did 2 weeks on a Sky Atlantic series called Britannia.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard of that.
It's brilliant, man. It's really good. I started watching it, obviously, just before I started working on it. So it's about the Roman invasion of Britain.
Yes.
It's kind of like Sky Atlantic's sort of Game of Thrones, but they've kind of gone a bit more comedy with it as well. It's really good. The first series is, you know, I think they were finding their feet. And then the second series, they really got into it. And then I've just had a little episode on the third series.
What did you get to wear? Did you get to don swords and sandals and all that Roman garb?
Oh, mate, honestly, it was brilliant. So my family in it, I don't know if I can say much, but we're kind of like ancient Celts, but like kind of backwater kind of people.
Like, you know, Roman hillbillies?
Kind of like hillbillies, yeah. Well, British hillbillies, because we're kind of the Celts.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was really good. It was really fun. And we were filming in like quarries and stuff. There was one scene where, you know, they built this mad little wooden hut that we live in. And I had to like throw a blanket on and walk out into the rain. They paid for these rain machines. The budget on it's just mental compared to anything else I've worked on.
Nice.
And I just remember thinking while I'm walking out in this quarry of like white clay with my hood over looking at this little hut. And I was thinking, fucking hell, it feels like I'm in Star Wars or something. And honestly, it was a pinch me moment where I was like, this is amazing. This is my job for the next week or two. So it was brilliant.
I think you really hold on to things like that right now. Like, I just finished a tour a couple of weeks before this as well, and so that memory is still fresh in my head. So you can kind of hold on to that, and you can go, I was so privileged to have that experience. And hopefully, you know, there'll be more of that again. But for the meantime, I can hold on to that and just count myself grateful and lucky that I got to do that. And, you know, all the other things that people like me and you have gotten to do in our lives. Like, that's the kind of stuff, I think maybe you're the same as me, that keeps me sane in these times where the work does dry up and, you know, the prospects are looking a bit grim. Is like, well, I've done loads of good stuff and there will be more.
Yeah, that's it, mate. And I think the thing is, it'll be the same, I imagine, for yourself as well. And I know it's the same for a lot of musicians, actors, writers out there. Is, you know, the reality is, like, I don't think it'll have hit just yet for a lot of actors and that, because, like, this is the normal for us. You know, we finish a job, and then there is no certainty in work coming up again.
Yeah.
So at this moment in time, I'm kind of like, well, I've just finished a job. I've got a little bit of money coming in from it. That should be able to tide us over for a little while. So it's just like normal. You know, that's how I feel after I finish every job. You know, the only thing that we haven't got now as actors, writers, et cetera, is that fallback job.
Yes. You know,
Is stocking that shelf, or, you know, delivering that meal or whatever you do. They're not there now. Them fallback jobs have gone. Most of them, anyway. You know, a lot of supermarkets and places are, you know, still hiring in that. There is jobs out there still. You know, personally, whether you know you want to risk it or not, you have to. It's one of them, isn't it?
I guess it's different if you've got kids and a family. Yeah,
exactly. You know, and like I say, Matt, obviously, right now we're self isolating for a couple of weeks, as I say. But up until a couple of days ago, up until my little girl got the temperature, my wife was still going to work and, you know, looking after poorly kids and stuff. So she's leaving the house and going out, and I'm kind of, what I want to get out and do stuff, man. I've set up with a few friends like a little volunteering group on Facebook, for my local area, because I live in a council estate. So, you know, there's people around here who are business owners who will be all right, and then there's people out here who, you know, live month to month anyway, and will struggle. So. It's a mad old times, but I think like I say, a lot of actors out there, there is no fallback and stuff, and so hopefully this, I do worry, because these new measures that have come in for the self-employed, you know, hopefully I should be all right with, because the last kind of 3 years have been reasonably okay for me, not amazing, but okay. But I do know that a lot of actors out there might have had 3 bad years, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what do they? Because they are self-employed, you know, but they're not self-employed like, a builder, say, who's got probably regular work or anyone like that. They're self-employed in the sense of they might have one job here, one job there, that kind of tides them over. They might live with parents or something like that, so I do worry about people like that in the creative industry, and in a lot of industries, I guess. I can't speak for many others, but, you know, I've worked in pubs and that, and I've got friends and family who work in pubs, and they don't know what's going on yet, because they're on stupid 0-hour contracts that should have been abolished years ago.
Yeah, and now, the hell knows when pubs and restaurants and bars are going to reopen as well. I mean, that could be months.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. That's going to be the one where, you know, because people congregate in them places, don't they? So, you know, this virus isn't going to go away too quick. Hopefully it does. Hopefully, I don't know, something comes and destroys it.
I think there's a lot of, you know, if you can kind of, again, look at the positives, there's obviously a lot of environmentally beneficial things that are happening right now because of it. The world's slowed down a bit. It's having a bit of a break. And even just in the familial unit sense, people are getting to reconnect with their loved ones, take some time out. So for now, it's kind of like, I think, a nice welcome break. It's just a case of how long is this going to go on? Like, a few more weeks, I think everybody can, you know, make it through that. But it's when we get to, like, say, summertime and it's still locked down, then then it's going to be time to start worrying, and these conversations that I start having with people might start taking a lot more of a negative tone then.
That's it, man, because like you say, I mean, I've not left my house now for nearly three weeks, I think.
Yeah.
Just because, like I say, I finished that job in London, and I was up and down on trains, and I was travelling around London on the tube, and working with loads of people, and when I got home, I was kind of like, it was about 3 or 4 days before, I think, you know, it was around about the time when Boris, I think the day I got home was the day Boris turned around and said, we're going to lose a load of people, wash your hands. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Try and stay alive.
So the government was starting to acknowledge it a bit. So I just literally like said to my wife, I'm like, I'm going to stay in with the kids. I didn't want my little one, my eldest, to go to school. And I was just like, she's not like, we're not. We're just staying in. We're just going to stay in. And then about 3 days later, the government advice was, schools are closed. Stay in anyway. So, I think you'll start to go stir crazy in a couple of weeks, I reckon. But you've just got to keep the positives, haven't you? Like you say, the planet's, you know, healthier. It's getting healthier. I was saying this to Tomo the other day. We did a little Instagram live, and I was saying, you know, like when someone, this is what I hope comes from it. When someone goes to the doctors and they get a health scare, you know, you see these films, or you hear of people going to the doctors, and the doctor will tell them, right, okay, you've got 6 months left to live.
Yeah.
And then they literally turn their life around in that 6 months, and they have the most amazing 6 months ever. I hope that this is humanity's health scare. I hope that we get through it, but what we take away from it is we can't be fucking the planet up. You know, this is humanity's, like, you've got 6 months less to live. Not saying that we've only got 6 months, but I want people to turn around now and go, right, okay, we do need to think about this. We do need to think about that. Why aren't nurses and doctors getting paid what they should be? And why are politicians taking a bigger bloody pay check every month? And do you know what I mean? Things like that. I think we need to look at social change and stuff massively now.
Mate, you've just distilled it beautifully. Humanity's health scare. That's brilliant.
That's what I think it is, man.
That's it.
And I hope it plays out that way, that we come back from this bigger and better. Definitely.
Let's break for your third song, Stone Roses, mate. The fucking roses. Sally Cinnamon, obviously as a Manchester lad, this band, again, would have been just before your time, but would have obviously been still looming larger than life, right? And
Yeah. So my dad is one of them. He still now plays music from the 80s and 90s. And the Stone Roses, I don't think would have been his favourites, but they were up there. So they were always on and always listening to him. But I started really getting into him in probably my late teens. And then when we did This Is England 86. Yeah, 86, Ian Brown was in that. He had a little cameo scene in it.
Did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's kind of a little blink and you'll miss him scene. You know the big fight scene where Flip comes and he's like, I'm going to count down from 30, whatever it is. If you pause it at the right moments, there's a little bit where Ian Brown's a copper.
Amazing.
And he twats me over the head with a plastic truncheon. So literally,
life goals.
Life goals to have Ian Brown beating you up. It's brilliant. So I got into him when I was in my teens. And like I say, you know, Ian was in This Is England. I remember just going over to him and just being like, all I could say was, you're Ian Brown. Do you know what I mean? I told the man who he was. He knows who he is. Again, one of them where you can pick apart any track of the Roses and Ian Brown's as well. I love his solo work, mate. But Sally Cinnamon is always one that's stood out to me. And me and my missus, it was our first dance.
Nice. There you go.
Because I always used to sing it to her in the pub to try and woo her, and it worked somehow. Because I can't sing that. But
that's what you should have told Ian when you met him. Rather than say you're Ian Brown, you should have said, you helped me woo my wife.
Oh, no, this was years before.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, that was years before. But I'd tell him that now. But yeah, it was our first dance song, and I just love it. And, you know, anytime it comes on, I always turn it up and sort of look over and smile at her and whatever. And when I'm out and about DJing, if I play it, I'll always ring her. I'm dead sad about that. She hates it.
Like I said, mate, you got a big heart.
Well, that's it, mate. That's it.
So talking about This Is England, a while back, Tomo did this post where he said you're going to be making a new series, and he fucked with the world, didn't he? Because it was such a dry joke. I bought it. I was like, no way, they're doing another one.
Basically, the story was, so we do Kendall Calling every year, me and Tomo. We DJ a festival in the Lake District called Kendall Calling, and me and Tomo, we don't get paid for it, but they let us take a load of our mates. So it's like free festival with our mates. They treat us well and that, put us in artist camping and all that. It's brilliant. And anyway, so we were all sat in the tent this one day, and we're all drinking and having a laugh like you do. And Tomo wanted to go and see, I think it was Jerry Cinnamon.
Yeah.
So it was proper raining, like it does every year. What a place to hold a festival, the Lake District. It rains
all year there, doesn't it?
I mean, they're not even lakes, they're just massive puddles. Tomo was like, I'm going to go and see Jerry Cinnamon. Does anyone want to come? And I think him and his wife went and watched him. And the majority of us stayed at the tent, and his mate, Kimball, because the music was playing through Tomo's phone on the speaker. And then Kimball went, oh, that's mad, innit? Tomo's miles away and his music's still playing. Obviously realised that he'd left his phone.
Amazing.
So then he's guessing his password, and it turned out it was, well, I can't say what it was, but he guessed his password. And then he went, should I tweet that we're going to make a new This Is England or what? And I was like, balls to it, do it, see what happens. And he tweeted it, and then it literally just started gaining traction. And then jokingly, because I used to work for Unilad.
Yeah.
Right there, in-house comedy and stuff. And I just jokingly went, bet Lad Bible jump on that. And about 5 minutes later, I heard Kimball shout from the other tent, like Bible have retweeted it. Anyway, it blew up then. I think someone had like Shane Meadows ringing him.
Did he really? At the festival as well. What a way to receive a call like that. You're just in the middle of like having a great time.
He didn't see it till the next day. Because he didn't have a clue. He was out in the festival, probably half-caught drunk.
Yeah.
And people were coming over to him, shaking his hand, saying, it's about bloody time. And he didn't have a clue what they were on about, because he didn't have his phone on him. So when we all met up with him, he was like, people are being weird today. And we were like, yeah, Kimball tweeted that we're making This Is England 98 or whatever.
How was Shane? Was he all right or was he pissed?
He played it all right, yeah. He played it all right. He just texted him saying, like, oh, come on, don't be daft and that. But, yeah. Hopefully, it won't just be a daft tweet. I reckon there could be something on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Shane's mentioned it a couple of times in interviews. We've not had any official confirmation yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see another This Is England.
I mean, it's such a well-loved franchise, mate. And, you know, the great thing with it is you can keep developing it, can't you? And a part of the joy, I think, as you started to do all the different years and the fashions and the music, is not only the character development, but you get to, as Shane does so well, delve into the culture of Britain in these different time periods.
Yeah, man, that's it. And the thing is you know... You're never not going to go and do it as well, because Shane's such an amazing storyteller.
Yeah.
You know, it's always going to be great. And like you say, it's really fun. So, you know, the first one was 83. You know, I was born in 1990, so I didn't have a clue about the 80s. Then 86, and, you know, again, being a big lover of hip-hop, that was just about kind of coming out over here and stuff. So Shane said to me, do you want to kind of gadget play the hip-hop kind of stuff, because you love it so much? And I was like, yeah. So constantly learning about things and whatnot. And then when 1990 came around, it was like, you know, I remember going to the set of mine and Harvey's flat for the first time, and it was like going back in time to being a little kid, because they had like a NES,
yeah,
like the Nintendo NES, and you know, things like that, a little gun, duck hunt, and just little things that you found were like, oh my God, like, I remember that, because I remember this stuff now, where the 80s, like, we didn't really remember a lot of it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Obviously, most of it. So hopefully, if we do another one, it's going to be kind of a bit more like that. You know, it's going to be a time period where...
You'll really connect to, yeah.
Remember it. Yeah, well, it would be stuff like... Who knows, like maybe a PlayStation. For me, I'm talking consoles, but like a PlayStation. And,
yeah, you bookend the year by whatever console was out.
Yeah, Art Attack's on the teller.
Have you still got the purple hoodie that Gadget wears in This Is England 90?
I have, mate, yeah, I have, yeah.
That's an iconic piece of film props right there.
Yeah, well, I haven't got the original. I haven't. So basically, I think I've said this to you before, so Gadget was meant to die in 1990.
Yeah. Thank God he didn't.
Yeah, if they're making another one, bloody hell, I've got a mortgage. got mouths to feed, Matt, you know what I'm saying? So I've got one of the copies of the hoodie that was made. So obviously when you're doing scenes that involve blood and stuff like that, they'll make copies of costumes.
Yeah.
Just so they can go again and, you know, there's no blood on it, saves them washing, whatever. So they had... The original hoodie was like the costume designer's actual personal hoodie that she got in like Ibiza in the 90s. And so she had others made that were literally made like a couple of weeks before shooting. So I've got one of them.
Amazing.
Fake. Real fake.
When was the last time you were all together? Would it have been Tomo's wedding on New Year's a couple of years back?
Yeah, probably Tomo's wedding, and it wasn't everyone as well, which was mad. There was the vast majority, but obviously, like say, people busy working and bits and bobs. But
and it was on New Year's Eve as well, wasn't it? So obviously, certain people have their own plans on nights like that, don't they?
Yeah, but yes, Steve Graham was there, Andrew Shin, Michael Socker, Joe Hartley, Vicky McClure.
Was Perry Joe there?
Joe Gilgan.
Yeah. He's the elusive one, isn't he?
Joe's quite elusive. I mean, the fellow lives in a cabin in the woods, I believe, nowadays. And that,
yeah.
Listening to the Two Shot podcast when he was on that. yeah, he's quite elusive, and he's busy. He's doing Brassic and stuff. So, he's busy doing bits. Sorry, someone's trying to ring me there.
No worries, bud.
I've not seen Joe for a while, actually.
I almost got an interview with him, mate. I got an email from his publicist, and just out the blue, and they were like, "Do you want to chat to Joe?" I was like, "Do I ever?" And then it almost happened, and then it didn't. It was a shame, but hopefully, on whatever project he's promoting next, I'll get the offer again and can lock it in. My goal is to try and get all of you one day. That's my goal.
Yeah, that'd be good. Like a little collector, like a weird little collector that you are.
That's
I'll get you all one day.
Well, Joe's got this new show coming out, which looks amazing. It's called In My Skin. Have you seen like the trailers or anything for that?
I have, yeah, Joe Hartley, yeah, I have seen that, yeah. I got a couple of friends who were in that. I'm keen to watch that. Has it not been out yet, that? No.
I think it starts on Sunday.
Right, brilliant.
But it
brilliant.
Looks like it's going to be pretty that. Powerful, and she looks great in it. Like, it's good because I've seen her in so much, and I love her work, but she's often in, like, a supporting role. And I'm really looking forward to just seeing her, like, front and centre and doing her thing. I think she plays, like, a manic depressive mother or something, right? So
okay.
It looks like it's going to be pretty heavy and deep and intense. And yeah,
wicked,
man.
Wicked. That's brilliant. She loves that as well, Jill, playing another mum. Let's play months. She always makes a joke about that.
Let's break for your second to last song, Biggie Smalls, Juicy.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Biggie Smalls connection.
So I bloody love Biggie Smalls, and when I was younger, again, like I say, I probably should have kind of maybe missed out on like Biggie and Tupac. They both died when I was 7 or 8, so I had no business listening to their music really. But again, because I hung around with my older cousin, and because, when you think of rap and hip hop, especially in the 90s, they're the two that springs to everyone's mind, right?
Of course. And Snoop Dogg.
But I mean, I think majority, there was always that thing, wasn't there, who was the best rapper ever, Biggie or Tupac? And you were either Team Biggie or Team Tupac, and that was because of the whole East Coast, West Coast thing and stuff that was going on in the States. I had this chat with Tomo and he don't remember any of this. I don't know, because I remember it vividly, like kind of, you either like Biggie or you either like Tupac, and you couldn't like one or the other.
Well, East Coast, West Coast beef would seep into everything from South Park to, like it was this cultural phenomenon, wasn't it, that everybody in culture was aware of, was this divide and this beef between the two sides of the states on the hip-hop front.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And like I say, I'd have been about 7 when that was going on. I didn't listen to any of these then. When I got a bit older and I was a teenager and I started listening to them, I was fully Team Tupac, fully California, West Coast, all that. Loved it and still do. And I never really give Biggie a chance, never really listened to Biggie. That's a little pun there. Give Biggie a chance. One more chance. sorry. Been in for a long time, man. Bear with me. So I never really give Biggie a chance, I guess. And there was the odd song that, Juicy, I think, is probably, if you say to someone, name me a Biggie song, they're going to say probably Juicy. Anyway, when I kind of got a little bit older, probably late teens, sort of early 20s, I started to listen to Biggie a lot, and again, like I said before, I love lyrics, and for me, his lyrics, like, just amazing, everything about it. If you'd have asked a 13-year-old me who's the better rapper, Biggie or Tupac, it'd have been Tupac till I die. If you asked me, 20 onwards, I'd say Tupac probably the better all-around entertainer. Probably, could switch it up a little bit here and there and, make more songs that could probably be played on radio and people could listen to, and then play songs that you wouldn't even, play in front of, in front of your grandma, where Biggie, like, probably a juicer that can play in a club. or a pub, and then everything else is just really deep, nasty lyrics, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say, yeah, Biggie's probably the better lyricist. again, Juicy's probably not my favourite Biggie song, but this is like sort of five songs to take with you into the apocalypse, isn't it?
It is, mate. So you got to go iconic, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the one that, you know, I've probably been drunk and sang that song out like as loud as I can, more times than any other song. If that comes on in the pub, we're singing it. Do you know what I mean? We're up on the table, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, When I Was Dead, but we're singing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I've been there, mate. I've been there.
Yeah, I think everyone does. You know, no matter what music you like. I think if that comes on and you've had the right amount of intoxicating alcohol in your system,
you get on top of that chair.
That's it. You're Biggie Smalls for a little bit in your own head. Everyone else can just pull you.
Here's a couple of things. Obviously, in quarantine mode, you know, Netflix, Amazon, streaming services like this are the saving grace. Have you been watching the Biggie and Tupac, the fictionalized version of events for the case? I can't remember what it's called, but it's like Cops.
Oh, yeah, maybe this is watched it when it was on. It's what was it called?
I can't remember for the life of me, but it's about the cops at the time trying to solve it, and then years later still trying to solve it as well, and they flick back and forth. It's really good, isn't it?
Brilliant. Yeah, because, again, my wife's not massively into hip-hop. She's one of them people, she knows every lyric to Juicer.
Yeah.
But she will not listen to anything else Biggie's made. Do you know what I mean? She's one of them, like, she likes R&B.
She's a pop diva.
Pop and stuff like that. But she likes cop detective stuff, so I kind of won around when that first came out a couple of months, well, about a year or so ago.
Yeah, best of both worlds right there, isn't it?
And we loved it, she loved it, I loved it, it got us, you know, and then I think we might have watched the Biggie biopic after that together and stuff, so I was like, oh, okay.
One step at a time. Here's one thing, though. You probably won't get to watch this, but have you been watching it on your own? The Hip Hop Evolution series on Netflix, which is just the greatest historical overview of hip hop I think that's ever been made that I've seen. It's so good.
Brilliant, isn't it? I've not watched it. Is it series 3 that's out now?
I think maybe even up to 4.
Is it? I've watched 1, 2. I've not watched the newer one then. If it's 4, I've watched 1, 2, and 3. And I've not watched 4, but absolutely brilliant. And I tell you what, on the first series, when obviously it's like the pioneers over in New York who kind of invented it.
Grandmaster Flash and Afrika Bambaataa and all of that,
Grandmaster Flash played at Kendall Calling 2 years ago, I think. Not last year, but the year before. And it is the best. He doesn't sing, obviously. He just plays music. He just DJs.
Yeah, he does get on the mic a lot and hype it up, though, doesn't he? I've seen him play. He's such a good live DJ.
Absolutely best. I mean, I I've watched Eminem live. I've watched Stone Roses a fair few times. I've watched, you know, some of my favourite rappers, 50 Cent, The Game, like people like that live. But honest to God, that was the best gig I've ever been to. And Kendall Calling, Grandmaster Flash. Literally, at one point, because I say my mates go and Tomo's mates go, one of Tomo's mates was just stood there with his arms folded going, this isn't on, someone needs to phone the police. And I was like, why? And he was like, because it's just so good, like, this shouldn't be allowed. And I was like, yeah, you're right, mate. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, that's the thing, if you're a good DJ, right, you've got every song ever written in your arsenal. And so you have at your fingertips, like, just the wealth of musical history to draw from. And he does it in such a way. He's such an insanely great mixer and turntablist. And he doesn't overdo it with, like, the scratching and the clever stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he did this thing where he was like, I'm going to take y'all on a tour of America through hip-hop. And he's like, New York. And he plays a bit of a track. And then he's like, LA. And he plays a bit of a track. And just shouts out random, like, sort of states or boroughs of states and yeah, he's just great. I think he even played a bit of, like, sure it was what's the song now? It's gone out of my head. The one that's
White Stripes, Seven Nation Army.
Yeah, played a bit of White Stripes. Yeah, that's it. I don't know why I like went out of my head. Played a bit of the White Stripes and that, and it's like Seven Nation Army, a hip hop DJ playing Seven Nation Army. What's going
on? He brings in everything, doesn't he? He'll put in like Madonna in there, Diana Ross, James Brown. Like, he puts in the full spectrum. It's not just hip hop, like, but he does it in a hip hop way. I've only seen him once, but I was the same. I didn't have my arms folded thinking it should be illegal, but I was just in awe watching him, just like, I might as well just quit now. There's no point. Like, that's a DJ. I'm an imposter.
Fuck all you hoes. Get a grip, motherfucker. Yeah. This album is dedicated to all the teachers that told me I never amount to nothing. To all the people that lived above the buildings that I was hustling from that called the police on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter. And all the niggas in the struggle. You know what I'm saying? It's all good, baby. It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? Da-ha, you never thought that hip-hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Raw G, Brucey B, Kid Capri. Funk, Master Flex, Love Bug, Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. I made the change from a common thief to up close and personal with Robin Leach. And I'm far from cheap, I smoke skunk with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me, now they write letters cause they miss me. I never thought it could happen, this rapping stuff. I was too used to packing gats and stuff. Now honeys play me close like butter play toast. From the Mississippi down to the East Coast. Condos in Queens, in dough for weeks. Sold out seats to hear Biggie Small speak. Living life without fear, putting 5 carats in my baby girl ear. Lunches, brunches, interviews by the pool. Considered a fool cause I dropped out of high school. Stereotypes of a black male misunderstood. And it's still all good, And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa. Got 2 rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. And my whole crew is lounging, celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack. Now my mom pimps a act with minks on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst days. Now we sip champagne when we thirsty. Damn right I like the life I live. Cause I went from negative to positive. And it's all. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. And if you don't know, now you know, nigga. Representing B-Town in the house. Junior Mafia, Mad Flavor.
Dude, here's another thing. I haven't seen it yet. I really should, because a lot of people have been talking about it. I think I've just been putting it off because of the heavy subject matter. Your last song is by R. Kelly, and you were like, can I pick this? Should I pick this? I said, yeah, because we can obviously talk about, as you suggested doing so, the separation of the art from the artist. I haven't seen the surviving R. Kelly thing. Have you seen that?
I've not. I don't like watching anything like that, mate. I don't. My mate always turns around to me. My mate Jamie's like, Andy, not everything Disney, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, but I can't watch. You know, my missus loves stuff like that. You know, it's weird to say loves stuff like serial killer stuff or
like true crime. She's into that.
Yeah, true crime. And you know, I just don't enjoy it. I just like that. I know that stuff happens, and that's, you know, horrible, but I just don't want to be reminded of it and sit and watch it. So I've not seen the documentary myself.
Are you aware of what he's been accused of?
Yeah, fully aware.
And is it kind of like a bang to rights, he is guilty, he was awful case scenario, is it?
I think he is. Yeah, has he been proved guilty? Yeah.
I don't know. I know nothing about it. I'm kind of like you in that sense. Like, I don't really...
I think he's been proved guilty or I think it was something like they can't really touch him or something. I don't know, but he's clearly a horrible, horrible human being.
So he's a right bastard.
Yeah.
But you've chosen one of his tunes anyway, so I guess you have to now defend why.
I'm not going to. This is the thing, right?
I love it.
I don't know if we've chatted about it before. Probably have, because I talk about it all the time. But I listen to a podcast called The Blind Boy Podcast.
Yeah. I love him. Did you hear the interview he did with Spike Lee?
Yes.
Wasn't that one of the most, like, just, it was a masterclass in conversation, that he absolutely killed that, to the point where Spike Lee was like fanning out over his knowledge, wasn't he? He's like, you're dropping science on me, son.
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? And I think they've become friends now. Like, he was emailing him and stuff, I think. Spike Lee was emailing him, like,
amazing
stuff. Yeah, brilliant. There's also another one where he speaks to one of, like, the world's most famous hip-hop photographers. If you've got an old-school 90s hip-hop album or photograph...
Oh, Glenn Friedman.
He's an Irish bloke. I can't remember his
name. Okay, right.
That's the random thing. He's, like, the world's... Like, if you, like, back in the day, the NWA cover and stuff like that, he shot it, I think.
Right.
From Limerick in Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was strange. But anyway, Blind Boy in his podcast, he talks a lot about, especially when the Michael Jackson documentary came out, he talks a lot about separating art from artists.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of artists throughout history, John Lennon, who we're talking about at the beginning of the podcast, you know, the messed up people.
Problematic, they've got skeletons in their closet.
Exactly, as have most people, I guess. A lot of people, not most, but a lot of people. But they still make incredible art. Now, does the art that they make deter away from the people? It's a dilemma, isn't it? And what he says is you've got to be able to separate art from artist.
100%,
you can write a song by an artist and hate that person because the scum. And R. Kelly is pure scum, and I'm not going to sit here and defend him at all. He's an absolute arsewipe. He's complete and utter scum. However,
big tunes.
His song that I pick, I Believe I Can Fly, you know, it holds so much nostalgia and so much memory for me of happy times. Do I then have to discredit that and not ever listen to that song again because of that? I think that lets him win if you do. In a weird way.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. There's loads of people that I like that are, you know, complete criminals, like Jerry Lee Lewis. A lot of the early rock and rollers, like fucking absolute hell-raising, you know, criminals. But just some of the most seminal and vital and incredible art that, you know, I wouldn't want to live a life that is denied those things, those statements that they've made. Certainly not. And is it the end of the world, Gadget? This is the time now more than ever to select the, you know, the absolute creme de la creme of what makes you happy.
Yeah, that's it. And like I say, I was in two minds because I probably would have gone and put that song. So I'm not this isn't in any kind of order, but like that came in my head before a few of these, and I was like, do I put that? And then that's why I put at the end of the message that sent you, like, I'm putting this, but like, you know. I get that getting the stuff back and separating art from artists, you have to do it. But yeah, I Believe I Can Fly, for me, it was I saying to you earlier, I grew up with my cousin who was a lot older than me, and one of the things that he introduced me to was basketball.
Yeah, I remember you saying in the podcast we did.
Yeah, I was a massive Chicago Bulls fan. I still am a fan now. I don't watch it as much as I used to, just because it's too really expensive to get the NBA app and keep up with it. I have the scores come up on me Alexa and that. But yeah, keep an eye on it. But yeah, and anyway, obviously 1996 and 1997, Space Jam came out. Michael Jordan being a Chicago Bulls legend, being at that time, me being a sort of little kid, one of my idols that I looked up to, I think it was like Michael Jordan and Eric Cantona were like my idols. That was the theme tune for the soundtrack for the film.
Boom.
Space Jam.
Yeah, I remember it well, mate.
My favourite film at the time, loved it. Great, what a cast as well. You know, you had Michael Jordan,
Daffy Duck.
Daffy Duck. but just it was Bill Murray. Yeah, Bill Murray was in it, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Played like his friend in it. And then whenever we went on holiday as a family, we used to go away sort of once or twice a year to places like Turkey or Spain and that. I got up one time and got on karaoke, and that was in the book, so I was like, yeah, what's sing that? I think it was about 8.
I'd love to have seen that. Incredible.
Sang it, and then got a round of applause, and was like, what is this? Why are people clapping? And just loved it, and that's probably why I do what I do now, I think.
That's what gave you the bug?
That's what gave me the bug, yeah.
Amazing.
I think that. Yeah, getting up and just having like an applause and people clapping, and even my mum going, oh, that was really good. I probably couldn't sing for shit, do you know what I mean? I can't now, so I don't know if I could then. I probably couldn't.
But you had the balls to try, and you entertained.
That's it. I entertained, and I did a karaoke performance to, probably about 30 drunk Brits in somewhere in Antalya in Turkey.
Classic.
It gave me that kind of, not the bug necessarily, I guess the bug, but it gave me that confidence. I was like, all right, okay, I can do that. I can get up and talk in front of people, or get up and sing in front of people. I can get up and talk in front of people. Do you know what I mean? And then from that moment on, I always said to my mum, I want to be a singer. And then my voice broke, and like I learned very, very quickly that I couldn't sing. And then I was like, okay, well, I still want to kind of do, and I wanted to be a comedian or an actor, and do you know what I mean? I just kind of kept going to them drama classes or kept whatever, because I just enjoyed making people laugh or smile, or, you know what I mean? So, yeah, as much as he's an horrible scumbag, pervert, or whatever he is, his art actually kind of spurred me on, so I can't discredit it, right?
No way, dude. No way. I'm with you. And it's your playlist, and it has been your life. Now here's your red book, and go off into the flames and
go off into where, man? In that garden.
Just next door. That'll do.
Can't do that.
Mate, what an absolute treat catching up. I always enjoy talking to you, dude, and yeah, it's doing these has really helped me stay sane and happy, and I thank you for taking the time, mate. It's been great.
Not sure. So when are we going to press record and start?
Oh shit, I haven't. Fuck.
No, honestly, when you texted me the other day, I was like, yeah, of course, man. Because like I say, I've done your other podcast, right?
Yeah.
Life in the Stocks.
Yeah.
And then you came on ours. Me and Tom came and met you. And when you asked me, he's like, yeah, obviously it's, yeah. And I'm a big fan of music. Don't judge me by these 5 tracks. They all mean something to me, but I love every type of music. Like if you go on my Spotify playlist, there's, everything from Frank Sinatra to, Eminem to boogie classical music. I love that. Me and the little girl, my youngest, when we sit and have breakfast in the mornings, when my wife's normally doing the school run, we have classic FM on. I love classical music. I love every kind of music. So when you asked if I'd come on and talk about some music, I was like, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's the great thing about doing these shows as well, because there's no genre thread. It is just the end of the world, songs that mean a lot to you. Everybody's picking really different stuff, and all of them I found just so well suited for this, you know, uncertain time that we're trying to figure out our way through. And I think that the people listening not only enjoy hearing the conversations and know that we're all in the same boat together, but music, man, it is the great healer.
It is, man. It is. And like you say, you know, someone said this on social media the other day. You know, a lot of actors, musicians, dancers, performers in general get a lot of stick about, oh, get a real job. Do you know what I mean? No, it's not a real job. Well, now you're all sat at home listening to our work and watching us on telly. Do you know what I mean?
Of course,
now,
man.
You need us. Now you need us. You know, it is a real job, obviously. We're not propping up, you know, we're not out there saving lives and stuff. We're entertainers, but...
But in a way, in its own subtle way, you kind of are, because imagine being in quarantine and lockdown without music, without television, without films, without books, without comedy specials. I mean, that would be... Then you really just have to sit and talk to your parents and your kids and your partners. Then it would be hell. No, you make a valid point, mate. You make a valid point. It's, you know, it might not be perceived to be honourable work, but it really is the stuff that gets people through the shit. Well, sometimes
I think that's, again, something that we can learn from all this is, you know, imagine, I mean, back in the day, my mum used to work in a care home, and you know, you'd have friends or aunties and uncles who do work. My auntie used to work in Asda. And it wasn't something you'd really turn around. You know, you wouldn't really turn around and go like, yeah, Mum, my auntie works in Asda. My mum's a care home assistant.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It'd be the kids in school going, yeah, my dad's got his own company.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, my mum, she doesn't do that anymore. And my auntie, she doesn't do that anymore. But they're the people that are actually the key workers that are supporting the economy and supporting the health of everyone. Do you know what I mean? Them people stacking shelves in Asda are now who we rely on more than ever.
Yeah, man.
You know, them people looking after them elderly, them people who we rely on more than ever. So this is what I was saying before, man. I think humanity needs to go, shit, we need to reassess ourselves really quickly. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's not the billionaires on top who are the important ones. Maybe it's the little people at the bottom who put a tin of beans on a shelf.
Mate, I've spoke to, I think you're the 10th person or thereabouts that I've spoke to for these shows, and you've distilled it better than anybody. The humanity's health scare.
I think that's it.
That's exactly it. Bang, nail on the head.
And the other one is, if you're out and about, this is what I was doing when I was on the train and the tube the other week. Well, the beginning of the last this month. What I've been doing, you know, when you're making food and you're cutting chicken.
Yep.
Because of salmonella, I whenever I cut chicken, I won't touch anything else until I've washed my hands.
Just think about life that way.
Everything
now.
Everything in the world outside your front door is chicken. It's raw chicken. Whether it's the table in front of you on the train, or your train ticket itself, or the petrol pump, it's raw chicken. Once you've touched it, it'll put your hands near your face. You got salmonella hands, wash them.
There you go, mate. Dude, thank you so much, mate. Really, really enjoyed catching up with you, buddy.
No, thank you, mate. I really enjoyed it.
For song, But now I know the meaning of true love. I'm leaning on the everlasting arms. If I can see it, then I can do it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar. I see me running through that open door. I believe I can fly. I can fly. I believe I can fly. See, I was on the verge of breaking down. Sometimes silence can seem so loud. There are miracles in life I must achieve, but first I know it starts inside of me. Oh, oh, if I can see it, then I can be it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar. I see me running through that open door. I believe I can fly. I believe I can fly. I believe I can fly. Hey, 'cause I believe in you. Oh, if I can see it, then I can do it.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.